He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the first day of December. It is Monday. Welcome to the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst and certified financial planner. And we're off on the wrong foot here so far, but not by too much. You got a couple. The crypto markets are disruptive here again today, disrupting, spreading into the stock market, in my opinion, and a few other issues. But the Dow is down 151 right now, 47,565. So it's down a third of a point. The S&P 500 is down 24 points. That's about a third of a point. Also, and we have the NASDAQ down, coming back now. It was down 200 points. Now it's down just 110, but still down a half a percent. The big issues that I see today, the bond market, our bond market, we're seeing a little spike in interest rates. It's up to the 10-year's up to 4.08. And that may be playing off a spike in interest rates in Japan. And why does that matter? Because it impacts the carry trade. There's always something to worry about. And good old dependable gold. Good old dependable gold is up again a half a percent. And I got to say, it's the most dependable performer in 2025. We'll get to Bitcoin next. But welcome to the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a fee-based only nationwide firm. Barry, when push comes to shove, where do you have more faith, Bitcoin or gold?
Well, I mean, I think gold has stood the test of time. I was doing a lot of research into Bitcoin this weekend, just in terms of the sell-off, what's exacerbated it, and It's a simple factor, leverage. You've got, I think there was a call where you've got some big exchange that's actually, I think, had to liquidate $400 million worth of Bitcoin today, and that's why you've seen this in, drop again, whether it was, roughly around 8% at one point today. But, you've got a lot of leverage in that space, and when you're when problems unwind and you've got, forced selling, it gives you, I mean, it's a speculative asset versus gold.
Well, I'm on record as saying I have very little faith in Bitcoin. In my book, it's kind of a pyramid scheme. As long as someone's buying and they're all buying, it can't go down. But as soon as there's some pressure and the selling sets in, there's not a lot to prop it up. It's in my book, it's a little bit of a house of cards. And I know that's not a very popular opinion. And I've had people try to explain to me where that intrinsic value lies in Bitcoin. And I've never heard a good explanation yet. But that's just me, okay?
And leverage makes the house taller. You know how when you're making a card house,
it makes it even
worse. Bigger cleanup at the end.
The wise man built his house upon the rock, unleveraged. Right, not on the sand. My favorite story of the day, Strategy, which used to be known as MicroStrategy, which is Michael Saylor, who's probably one of the biggest Bitcoin bulls in the world, on Monday had to convert a lot of his Bitcoin to cash, to the U.S. dollar, to meet liquidity issues. I find that very interesting that, I thought Bitcoin was the reserve, your trusted reserve. No, we're establishing a cash reserve to complement our Bitcoin reserve. So anyways, that's also another little brick in the wall that rattles my faith in the crypto. Okay, we had the best Thanksgiving week. Well, not the turkey and the dressing. I'm talking about the markets that we've had since 2008. But as I did the analysis on Saturday for an abbreviated newsletter, I saw that that forward P.E. ratio, we went right back up to close to 23 once again. We finished the week at 22.6. Hey, that 23 has been a ceiling, okay? It's been a ceiling for the last 5 years. Never mind that the last 5 year, the average forward P.E. ratio is 20. The top is 23. So if you know anything about Bollinger Bands, which are kind of, reverting to the mean is 20. 23 is the extreme outer band, and it seems to recoil once it hits that 23 mark. Well, we hit 22.6 on Saturday, which doesn't leave a lot of room in that theory there. We only got four little points to go before you recoil, but you throw in the Bitcoin markets being shaken again here today. The bond market moving up to 4.08. That's a pretty big jump, and I think that's being caused. And believe it or not, that Japanese bond, I track that every Saturday because it fuels the carry trade. You borrow cheap money from Japan, and you invest it in the AI markets in the U.S., and it's been old reliable. But with the moving up of Japanese interest rates, a new premier in Japan, a conservative woman, they're talking a rate hike over there in Japan. So now you've got another little force on the market here that is rattling the markets here to begin this new week. Now, historically, December's a good month. In fact, they say Santa Claus usually pays a visit to Wall Street, but don't forget.
Usually about 1%. I think I saw a stat that was about 1%, and I think in the last 10 years, though, it's been basically flat, so it's on average.
But yes, and
it's usually a good month.
Maybe this is a sign of what's to come. We watched the Grinch on Saturday,
okay,
with all the grandkids. Dr. Seuss, still one of my favorites. I still love Dr. Seuss. I grew up with Dr. Seuss. When my mom took me to the library, I'd come home with six or seven. Of course, he was a San Diegan.
Green Eggs and Ham.
Oh, I love
it. Man,
yes.
That was one of my faves.
Yes, okay. So we watched the Grinch, and of course, we do have the Grinch lurking out there. His days are numbered, and he knows that. And sometimes when people's days are numbered, they seem to act a little bit more angry and they act out. Trump has picked the new Fed chairman. We don't know who it is, but the Kalshi prediction markets are assigning an 82% chance now to Kevin Hassett. So they must know something we don't know. But the Grinch is out there. He's lurking in the form, wearing his little Grinch hat and his stockings, Chairman Powell, who's not exactly a friend of Donald Trump. And, I thought the market was pretty premature and just saying, yeah, we're going to get a December rate cut. Not so quick. I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, we'll get PCE data at the end of this Friday.
Well, that might have some kind of impact, but I personally put it at 50-50.
And we got an 85% chance at the moment. Yeah,
they get a lay $20 bill on not happening for me, and I'll take the odds and give the points. But anyways,
I guess the question will be for this December, right? Will the Fed put a present under the tree, right? Or are we getting some coal?
He's not going to do it, I don't think. But we'll see. Wall Street Post best Thanksgiving week performance, and I was a little skeptical of it myself. You know, it's on light volume.
Yeah.
There was a rebound somewhat in the crypto markets, taking it back up to 90,000. But once again, I don't have a lot of faith in those crypto markets because, you know, there's a group of people out there saying, gee, I wish I would have got out at 125,000. I wish I would have got out 110,000. It's back to 90. I'm out of here. And that's what you have. And that's what shows up in the charts. The charts are the evidence of what's happening underneath the surface. And when I looked at the chart of Bitcoin over the weekend, I said, that's still a weak chart. I don't have a lot of faith in that chart that it's going to go storming back to 125,000. It seems like Michael Saylor doesn't have a lot of faith either, as he's raising dollars right now to give him a little bit of liquidity. So, hey, we have so much to talk about today. I thought it was going to be, okay, we'll ease back into a full work week. It shouldn't be too tough, Bill. Just slip back into it. No, I started digging into the news, and, man, there's a lot taking place here in the markets today. And, by the way, happy birthday, ChatGPT, which turns 3 today. I still remember where I was when ChatGPT was released. Isn't that something? We'll be right back. Quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. I think the first big story is this Airbus story. That's not a good story for them at all, I suppose. Let's just take a look and see how Airbus is reacting. Airbus is a publicly traded company. It trades on the pink sheet, but it trades big volume, so you can definitely buy and sell it, no problem. I had somebody that transferred in some Airbus to us, Barry, and I sold it last week. I didn't like the way it was behaving, the chart. But I held it for a while because, you know, when somebody transfers something into us, I don't just automatically sell it on day one. Hey, let's try to get as much as we can out of it. It finally peaked at $61.70 per share, started to roll over a little bit. I said, you know, this thing's really expensive. And its competitor, Boeing, has a very, very weak, one of the weakest charts in the entire, in the Dow, for sure. So I sold the Airbus. Airbus is a $178 billion major competitor, headquartered in the Netherlands with a lot of French exposure. That stock is only down 2.39% right now, but it was down big. Well, that's not so bad, 2.39%, but they have an issue.
So and part of it being from a solar flare, it's hard to control that, right?
How do you control that?
Control the sun.
You can plan for all kinds of different kinds of risk, and you get hit by a solar flare, and it knocks things out, and that's something you can't. Maybe you should plan for it, I don't know. But anyways, that's Airbus plunges after Reuters reports a new quality problem on dozens of A320 jets. Right now, I'm going to say it's not that big of a deal. It was down 10%. Now it's only down 2.3%.
But what's usually, Boeing looking like? Are they benefiting this from
the you would
fact?
Think Boeing would be bouncing a little bit, even though the Dow's down today. Boeing is basically flat on the day. Boeing was at 242. It's down 35 points from its high. It's had a pretty steep sell-off. We don't own Boeing.
It's starting to kind of be in that. I've been keeping an eye on it. We could turn into that. Could turn into that value play. But it's still it's just headline risk. It's hard to get away from.
And I'll tell you the other thing. The apartments that they're building here in my neck of the woods, with news that Boeing's going to double their size in South Carolina. You can't believe how many apartment complexes are going up for the workers. And I was talking to another kid yesterday. He works at Mercedes-Benz. They make the Sprinter vans here, and they're ramping up, too.
Mercedes.
And
big.
Google is ramping up their campus here in the Charleston area. So
the only
problem
with Charleston is you can always widen roads, but it's hard to widen bridges, right? At some point, you got to go over the water, and
that
widening
bridges
takes a lot longer.
Tough one. I know they have plans on widening it, but to get to Boeing, you got to pretty much go over the couple of bridges. So we need some wider bridges here in our neck of the woods. Okay, man. Okay, so we got the Airbus story there, which is pretty big. The next story I got is, let me get back to my, there we are. We got, Japan yield spiking. I talked about that. It's hitting the risk on trade pre-market. And that has, off and on during the year, it has been, a problem for the market when those, yields spike in Japan. I've explained this before, the carry trade. Where these big institutions or hedge funds are borrowing money from Japan on the cheap and turning around and arbitraging and buying assets here in America. When that yield spikes in Japan, that cuts into the carry trade, which has fueled a lot of the movement in the market. We still have some earnings coming in this week, believe it or not. And, of course, yeah, we're going to get Salesforce, a member of the Dow. Benioff, the guy that last Monday kicked Google into gear with his comments about their new latest version of AI. We're going to get Snowflake. We're going to get CrowdStrike, which is probably one of the top three, along with Palantir and a couple others there that might be in third place. CrowdStrike is maybe number two behind Palantir in my book. Software stock, we're going to get Marvell, which is in the top five of semiconductor stocks. DocuSign, Hewlett-Packard Enterprises, Mongo, Dollar Tree, Macy's. So there's still a few that are going to hit. In the meantime, you know, old dependable, old faithful has been gold. Gold is up again, and there's a big story out there today on
one
that we have a big position in, Barrick. Barrick is going to evaluate a potential IPO of their North American gold assets. So that would be kind of a spinoff, I suppose.
Yeah, it includes what you're doing. It's a bit of financial engineering, but in reality, it's kind of like you think of GE years ago in terms of they've got this Vegas, I think it's a, not Vegas, but it's in Nevada mine that essentially analysts have felt has been undervalued for a long period of time. And so, what they're thinking of is, say they're spinning that out, or I don't know if it's a private asset held by them, but, essentially, unlocking that value and making it available to all of us, public investors. Right?
So. I have a heck of a lot more faith in gold than I do in Bitcoin. And that's all you got to do. Look at the chart of MicroStrategy, MSTR. And by the way, there's a couple of inverse ETFs on MicroStrategy. Basically you're shorting Bitcoin. You're going short on Bitcoin. There's also some short ETFs. BITI is the inverse one of them. There's SBIT, which is leveraged inverse ETF on Bitcoin. And then there's an ETF that is, there's two of them that are inverse Michael Saylor's MicroStrategy, which is now called Strategy. His strategy's not doing so hot. He's one of the guys, you know, Barry, there's three people that I can, well, there's four, that I don't really listen to on Wall Street. You probably know who they are. Kathy right. Wood is at the top of the list for me. She's usually doing exactly the thing I would not be doing in the market. God bless her. Number two, Jim Chanos, who is a well-known, infamous short seller who's been wrong for 27 years. Of course, it used to be. He's kind of disappeared, though, the guy down in Puerto Rico. I don't know what's become of him. Schiff.
What happened?
Peter
yeah.
Schiff. I don't listen to him, and I don't listen to... Michael Saylor, and there was fourth one.
And don't forget your guy,
Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, and he was kind of the bearish, and of course he's kind of turned around a little bit. But yeah, he was wrong for an extended period of time. I don't think of his name here in a minute. I saw him on TV a couple
yeah,
of days
well,
ago.
Yeah, Mike Wilson, not Mike.
That's
Wilson.
It. Yeah, Mike Wilson.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
it.
And yep. then there's another one just like him that's just as bad. You know, I like to listen to people that are right. Most of the time, right? 90% of the time, they're right. I agree with them. That's who you want to listen to. But look at the chart of Barrick. hitting a new high today. We'll be right back.
Hit us in a bad place, and I wonder what it's good for.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. I'll tell you what's, there's been a lot of noise recently about China and Taiwan. And there is an interesting article in Seeking Alpha today asking several of the analysts that write stories for them. They didn't ask me, but that's okay. That's cool. I don't have time right now. What happens to the chip sector if China retakes Taiwan? Number two, I mean, what happens to the world economy? Look what during COVID, the automobile sector was unable to get chips, and it pretty much brought them to a screeching halt. Imagine what would happen to the chip sector if China were to retake Taiwan, which there's been a lot of noise, and you know, we talked about it last week, really didn't think they would ever just come in and just smother Hong Kong like they did, but it did. It happened, and Hong Kong now is totally, you know, under Red China control, and of course Taiwan. Now, in talking to some military people, they say there's only 2 months out of the year that were those straits. Those are very rough water. I know about rough water. We had rough water off of San Diego from time to time. When that wind blows, those waves can get 20, 30 feet. It's hard to invade a country with that kind
right.
of weather. Yeah. But I'm told that in March and November, those are the 2 months. And some military is expecting 2027. November 2027 to be, they have that circled on their calendar as a potential. So we don't know. Look, if you ask Elon Musk said it's inevitable.
It's inevitable. Right.
It's in that China, Taiwan belongs to us. And don't even question it. This new leader of Japan said something about it, and all of a sudden they stopped all buying of Japanese goods. So that just tells you how serious they are. Now, having said that, we obviously now have a Taiwan. I think there is a contingency plan. Number one, I don't think they're going to let China get that technology. And we've heard that they would detonate the plants if they had to keep them from getting that technology. That's what I've heard through the grapevine. And number two, Taiwan has a plant in Arizona, and they have produced an NVIDIA chip there. Maybe that's the contingency plan. I don't know. I know that Taiwan's also been expanding a little bit. Taiwan's on my to Japan, so that, and I saw that Micron is going to build the plant. You know, you've got this huge shortage in memory right now that has tripled the price of memory chips. And I see Micron is ramping up. They produce a lot in Idaho, yes, but they produce probably at Taiwan Semiconductor. And they're also going to build a factory in Japan. I think they're looking ahead to contingencies. But anyways, it would definitely disrupt the global chip sector. And it's just one of those things, you know, you mitigate against risk. I heard them talking this morning about the outage that they had in the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. That was a risk that they knew was there, but they didn't really take seriously, where one of the data centers goes down and it took them 10 hours. So they obviously didn't have that contingency thought out well in advance. So there's risk to those data centers, too. And what was that about? Air conditioning on a very cold day. So go figure that. Okay, one other hot spot in the world besides Taiwan. Trump says Venezuela airspace to be closed in its entirety as tensions escalate. And he has made some noise about some kind of land attack on the drug trade route, which, you know, he seems hell-bent, and he should be, to stop that fentanyl from coming into the U.S. There's still a fentanyl tariff on Mexico. He took the fentanyl tariff off of China, and I believe there's still a fentanyl tariff on Canada, but it seems to me that the major source of all of this is coming out of Venezuela, and he's not only taking out boats, supposedly fishing pongas. No, I know what a fishing ponga looks like. You've got usually a guide that's banging on the outboard engine, Barry, to keep it running to make it back into the harbor.
Right.
You don't have three Merc or Yamaha engines.
Three 300s on the back of it, right?
Yeah, so there's always that out there, too, okay? An invasion of some sort. I probably would think we would do something like we did to Iran. All of a sudden, the F-35's flying over, and a few sites are decimated down below, putting their drug business out of business. So that's something that hangs out there. And, of course, we still have the Supreme Court decision that's out there on the tariffs.
Well, and much I mean, larger country and certainly a lot more complex. But, I mean, you know, we've done things, whether it was, you know, Panama with you
El
know,
Salvador.
Taking over Noriega.
Yep.
We've done, of course, you had, El Salvador, and you had Grenada. I mean,
that fentanyl trade's going to be shut down. I can tell you that one way or another, and it's going to take a bit of a fight. Okay,
talking about rerouting supply chains. I saw where a lot of now they've had an influx of cocaine and other narcotics into Europe at the moment.
Wonderful,
because they're looking need a different place to send it to.
Yeah, they need a new customer. Man, I'll tell you what, I don't dig those drug lords at all. But you know, hopefully the fight is going on. Okay, ETFs. It's a hot deal. It continues to be a hot deal. The mutual fund industry is a dying industry. I looked into starting a mutual fund maybe 10 or 15 years ago, and I didn't like it. I could see it was a dying industry. The break-even point is not good. But ETFs are a much more scalable thing. I didn't know Dan Ives has an ETF. Wedbush has an ETF. I have a lot more faith in Ives. IVES is the symbol. I added it to the app this morning. Then I do an ARK, ARKK.
I realized he had. Obviously, Wedbush in terms of them, their mutual funds, but I didn't know they had an ETF.
Well, it has $920 million in it already, which is, just shy of $1 billion. And here's the moves that he rebalances quarterly. I would do it more often than that, and I am still looking into a couple of ETFs. I have some friends in the industry that basically they do that for a living. You want to take an ETF to the market, we do all the grunt work, all of the permitting, all of the processing and everything like this.
Legal stuff. I mean, there's a ton and tons of
documents, and SEC gets involved. But I would love to take on Dan Ives. I really would. I don't know. I'll put up my ultra growth portfolio since 1999. I think that would maybe outdo most ETFs out there. But anyways, here's the changes he's making this quarter. Okay, and I found these to be interesting, and I agree with what he's a guy I generally agree with most of the time. Okay. But he is a perma bull, and he is all tech. I mean, he never talks about Lilly. He never talks about, Deckers Outdoor and things like that. But it's all tech, and you're at the mercy of AI if you own that thing. I would rather spread out my wings a little bit. But he's added CoreWeave, IREN. Okay, IREN is very crypto-related. But it's also AI related, and he's added Shopify. Here's what he's removed. I totally agree with the ones he's removed. Soundhound. Yeah, you know what? It was kind of a bit player out there in the AI world where they create sounds using AI. ServiceNow, which it's not really an AI company. And you know what? It's been a bad stock. It, along with Salesforce, have really lagged the market, and he's removing Salesforce. So I totally agree with those. Though there was a time when ServiceNow, that was one of our greatest finds of all time and one of our biggest winners of all time. That was several years ago. And Salesforce obviously went into the Dow. It's never been the same, really, since it's gone into the Dow. It's pretty much very difficult for it to even beat the S&P 500. But those are his moves, adding CoreWeave, which I've been looking at. I did get back into an AI stock last week. I see it's up 4% today. As the chart looked really good. I don't agree with Iran. And Shopify, I don't know. Shopify, I have my moments with Shopify, and I have other moments with them. When we come back, we'll discuss just for a moment what Kathy Woods is buying and selling. And then there's news on a lot of other stocks here today. We'll be right back. You got to go. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. You know, going back to that Taiwan thing, obviously, what would it do to the stock Taiwan Semiconductor, number one? Number two, what would it do to all the semiconductor companies that have their chips made there? NVIDIA being number one. What would it do to NVIDIA stock? You know, look, we woke up one day and Russia was invading Ukraine, right? I remember where I was it's been 3 years now. I was sitting writing my newsletter when the attack on Israel occurred down there in southern Israel. And I remember when the takeover in Hong Kong kind of happened little by little, and then it happened all of a sudden. That's kind of how it works. And, you know, you just have to wait.
And
that
was already
that
going down. It was already going down that path because, yes, of course, you had the British, we've relinquished control, you know, in the late 90s in terms of their lease, I guess, of Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And so it was working towards that over time. But, yeah, it would seem to be more of an abrupt change, obviously, if you have an attack on Taiwan. And it's one of those things that you would expect to be a surprise, right? It's not
they're not going to announce it a year in advance that we're going to invade on November 3rd, 2020.
But, probably more of a surprise moment than Ukraine. I mean, you remember Russia was building forces, right?
They were massive
for a period of time, right? And so with China particularly invading an island, as we know from D-Day and other, unfortunately, from other historical events over the years, it's something where surprise is going to be important.
Well, they're ramping up their navy. I mean, that's not for a land attack. I mean, they are building their navy out at a much faster rate than any other country in the world. You can't come to any other conclusion than it would be a massive shock, not just to Taiwan Semiconductor, not just to NVIDIA, not just to AMD, but to the entire stock market and the global economy. I don't know how you can come to any other conclusion than that. That's why you cannot be a permabull anymore. Jim Chanos was the other. Did I mention Jim Chanos?
Yeah, you got Chamos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Chanos. It was Mike Wilson that we were missing a bit.
But you just can't, because things in the world changes, the stock market changes, and I would just have to think that a Dan Ives ETF probably stays fully invested all the time. And a Bill Gunderson ETF would measure on a daily basis, like I always do, the interest rate environment, the U.S. economy. You don't want to be heavily invested in tech stocks if we were to go into a recession, a bad recession here in the U.S., nor would you want to be heavily invested if they started massing and preparing some kind of attack on Taiwan. That's why you just cannot be set in your ways and handcuffed to your whatever your charter says of your particular ETF or fund. Oh, we have to remain 80% invested all the time because the charter says so. Well, you know what? You're going to go down with the ship then at some point in time. Speaking of which, the ship, the ARK, is springing a leak. She's been loading up on crypto-related stocks. I mean, she seems to always be doing the wrong thing at the wrong
time. Yeah, it seems to be increasing risk at the time. Where
doubling
like,
down on mistakes. And that's you have to run from mistakes, learn from mistakes, try not to make those mistakes again. Look, we go back to the year 2000 when the NASDAQ went down 79%. The mistake made then was everybody, almost everybody, was too loaded up on tech. And number two, they were disregarding valuations and earnings. And, of course, by how much? By a long shot. You had a 79% correction in the NASDAQ. Well, I learned from that. And I'm glad to have gone through that, although it was quite a welcome. You know, I left another industry and got into the market, stock market industry. I'd only been in for maybe 6 months or something like that when that hit, 9 months, something like that. Welcome to the market, 79% sell-off in the NASDAQ. And most of the guys I was working with at that time, they were just gone. I saw one of them. He was a barista at Starbucks. You know, and they just got wiped out. They never got back into the market. And a lot of people in the industry, a lot of mutual funds, all of those stars that I used to see up in the Bay Area, the tech fund managers, Garrett Von Wagner, several others, they were just, you never heard from them again. Because they got wiped out. So anyways, you have to be unconstrained. Why do you want to place constraints on you, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You don't always want to be invested in the market, bottom line. And so by an index, you hold zero cash. And, you know, with a lot of ETFs and mutual funds, even if, you know, the quote unquote active ones, there's, you know, by prospectus, they're only allowed to go 20%, you know, cash.
That's
or
the problem with
sometimes.
An ETF. You know, I would rather have a collection of ETFs and be able to throw in an inverse ETF if I think I need to from time to time, right? So anyway, and the other thing is being a perma bear, which the two we mentioned, Wilson and Jim Chanos, no question about it. That's all he does is short sell. Well, when you short sell, if you look at a chart of the S&P 500 over the last 20 years, it's just, you know, up, 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 up and away, and my beautiful balloon. But if you're fighting that against that trend, you know, you're just a contrary SOB that can never admit that you're wrong, right? And you just keep doubling down. And I see today he's saying all of these things that are going to go wrong with the AI sector and how they're going to crash and burn. And he's been saying that about every sector, his entire career, basically. And I know that he eventually folded up shop.
Yeah, recently.
But he still gets a lot of press because he comes out with sensational headlines. And sensational headlines sell. Attract money, right? I guess, but eventually he ran out of other people's money to be a permeable bear with. Okay, we're out of time. It's going to get, you know, interesting here in December. There's a lot going on with that Fed meeting hanging out there and this disruption in the crypto markets, which is spreading to the stock markets. Luckily, I'm unconstrained, and I like being that way. To get the newsletter, to stay on top of all this on a weekly basis, GundersonCapital.com, to get with a money manager who is not constrained, Give us a call at 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.